I want you to picture this. Her name is Kayla. She's 17, alone, terrified, and pregnant. Sitting in a clinic, tears blurring, thinking abortion is her only option. Until she was offered a free ultrasound, paid for by a hero just like you. The moment Kayla heard her baby's heartbeat, the decision was made. And today, her little boy, Gabriel, is thriving because preborn walked with Kayla every step of the way. Now, multiply that by 38,000. That's how many babies preborn has helped save just this year. How many mothers preborn has come alongside with practical and spiritual resources to make motherhood possible. But here's the most important thing you will hear today. Their goal is to save 70,000 babies by the end of the year, and they can't do it without us. Every $28 provides that ultrasound the moment everything changes. Will you be the reason the next Kayla chooses life? The reason Gabriel fulfills his destiny? To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby. Or donate securely at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
We inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to At the Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you here on the program. Walker Wildman here. Rick Green is with us. And Rick, I'm having a little bit of audio issue on my end. So if you can take it over until I get it resolved.
Well, I heard silence, and so I jumped in on you, man. Sorry about that. we had planned on you opening, but it was silent. And I thought, okay, maybe he's just playing the, you know, the buildup, right? You let the silence go just long enough to where everybody's going, what's happening? What's happening? And then whatever we say is really profound, but I don't have anything profound to say. But it is great to be back together. It's the first time we got to co-host in quite a while. Normally, Walker's with y'all on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and I'm with you on Tuesday, Thursdays. But once in a while, we mix it up, and we're going to do that today. And, of course, you can be a part of the program if you'd like to call in. We would love to hear from you. 888-589. Wow, I just blanked on the number. That's how long it's been since I did this. 888-589. Walker, what's – I can't believe I'm forgetting the last – Bobby, go ahead.
8840.
Wow. You know what? I knew being in Hawaii for a wedding would kind of put me in this island time mentality where my brain didn't work half the time. I didn't expect to show up like that. Anyway, so where are you, bro?
I am at one of our remote studios away from the office for the day, and I'm actually, Rick, I'm having trouble getting some of the audio, so I'm going to jump over to another source.
Okay.
And I'll be back in about a minute or two.
No problem. No problem. I can tap dance for sure. And first of all, I'll just say to the audience, miss y'all. Man, I miss doing calls. And, you know, the last, I guess, three or four programs I've done have been sharing some biblical citizenship with you and just sharing some ideas of how to live that out right now. And, you know, what we're saying now, you know, what time is it? Everybody's always saying, you got to know what time it is. Well, men of Issachar understand the times and know what to do. And so we've been working on applying that. I've had a crazy couple of weeks, but really rewarding. Two of my kids have gotten married in the last 2 months, and just thrilled with where they're headed in their lives. And my youngest son decided to get married in Hawaii. So I was, I was suffering for the Lord in Hawaii for the last week or so. But we had a great time. Ton of our family flew out there. And I'm telling you that I've been to Hawaii many times, not many times, like three or four times, just literally like flying out there, giving a speech and flying back, not really getting to enjoy it much. This was the first time that I had ever been to Kauai, that island. And wow. I mean, it felt like I had stepped into Jurassic Park for sure, but I'm telling you, my kiddos, they found this secluded, like, I mean, on the other side of the island, took 3 hours to get there through horrible roads. It literally felt like you're going through the jungle. But all they right. found this secluded beach, and I'm telling you, it was the perfect setting for a wedding. Just
you got me good.
Amazing.
Okay.
Oh, it was,
hey, Rick,
it was gorgeous.
I'm back.
All right, brother. Yeah, man. So the world of technical difficulties. It happens, right?
You know, yeah, you know, I've done a lot of remote broadcasting, never had that happen, but I could hear you loud and clear. I just couldn't hear the program and the music coming in. So I had no idea we were live until until Bobby said, "Hey Walker, your mic's hot." But yeah, I'm loud and clear, ready to roll. And Rick, you've got some of our team over at iVotoGuide out at your campus this week.
Man,
right?
they're having a blast right now, literally a blast. They're doing one of our handgun defense courses yesterday and today. And then tomorrow we'll really start working on planning and just collaborating. And I'm going to get to share with all of them in the morning, kicking them off. But yeah, man, we're excited to have everybody here. And of course, you know, we've talked for years about the importance of iVotoGuide and why, you know, even as someone who lives, breathes, and eats this stuff, I take it and, you know, I go study it. I go into the booth with a list that I have to go get educated on because there's so many elections on the ballot. And so even for the major candidates and the major campaigns, most people don't know until they go in who they're going to vote for. But for sure, all those elections down ballot, including even state legislature. So it's vitally important to have a tool like iVotoGuide that goes deeper than just what the candidates say, but actually goes into who gives them money, who have they given money to, who have they helped in the past. Because a lot of these candidates, they come in and we don't know anything about them. They don't have a voting record. And so it's a critical, critical piece of turning the country around. We cannot be an effective constitutional republic if we don't have informed voters. And so, yeah, love iVotoGuide and thrilled that y'all decided to do your team meeting here at the campus.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll be presenting on Thursday to the team there, the iVotoGuide team. Hey, Rick, I sent you a couple stories this morning, and there's tons we could talk about in the news. But one story, and we'll play the clip to set this up, but immigration obviously is one of the core tenets that President Trump ran on. And fixing America's immigration system, obviously stopping and deporting illegal immigrants. But even the legal immigration system has its problems.
Yeah.
And we've been allowing into this country legally people who just fundamentally don't agree with America. They don't like America and definitely don't agree with our founding ideals that originated this country. So let's play a clip here. This is about a minute and 20 seconds of Governor DeSantis explaining the problem, even with our legal immigration system. Let's hear.
But you know, you have some strain on the right that says, no, you know, illegal immigration is bad. Legal immigration, no matter what, is good. And wait a minute. Now, I'm not saying any of it's that it's all bad or what, but is bringing 10 million people from like Somalia and dumping them into Georgia, is that good because it's legal? I think you have to think critically about what are we doing with an immigration policy, and is it benefiting the American people? Is it helping to promote a strong American culture? We should never bring people into this country who hate America. And when I... And I want, when I look at like Mindami's dad and listen to the stuff he's saying about America being the story, I'm like, why would we have wanted somebody like that to come? I mean, especially if you think America is so bad. So we have to be smart. It's lazy thinking to say anything that's legal must necessarily be good. Some of these companies game these systems with bringing cheap labor. So there's a whole host of things, but don't do what Europe did. Europe did a mass migration that was legal, that was intentional, and it's proven to be disastrous. So as conservatives, we must think.
Well, there you have it, Rick. Since the late 90s, just to give folks some numbers here, specifically Somali immigrants, which many of these are Muslims, by the way, probably the vast majority of them, we've imported nearly 200,000 Somali immigrants since the late 90s. And when you look at Minnesota and Minneapolis, you can definitely see the effects of that. But Rick, even some legal immigration doesn't benefit America, right?
No, it's, you know, of course, DeSantis, the greatest governor in history, proves it over and over and over again. And here again, he's saying it exactly Right. And it's a self-inflicted wound. You know, so many of the problems that we have right now, we literally invited this in. And I don't think that was just out of a, you know, goodwill. I want to help people from around the world. I think there were definitely nefarious characters that wanted to dilute the backbone of America and dilute the value system of America. And as he said it, it's exactly right. That should be the lowest bar. If you hate America, you don't get to come here. We're not going to welcome you in. And I'll admit, Walker, I had a saying for a long time that I think I now have to give a lot more clarity to. I've always said that it ought to be 1,000 times harder to come into America illegally and 1,000 times easier to come legally. What I always meant by that was the person that's coming to work wants to come, you know, and do work and pay taxes and then go back home. And, you know, and they should be able to come across the border and we know who they are and they register and, it, you know, there's an ID and that should be easy. It should also be easy for families that are escaping persecution and that do share our values and that want to be a part of America and assimilate America. That process should be easier. What should not be easy is for 200,000 military age Chinese men to come across and now be, you know, where in our country? We don't even know. It should definitely not be easy for Muslims to come to America that are dedicated to a caliphate and dedicated to literally conquering, not assimilating, but conquering and devoted to Sharia law. Those types of people should not be invited into our country. I mean, these should be simple, common sense policies. Used to be that way, right? I mean, that used to be our stance. We were very careful about who we let into the country, and we wanted people to come. We need to grow in that way. We need good, you know, not just labor, but there's lots of reasons for good immigration. But man, we've gotten so, and he said it right. It's intellectually lazy. It's just intellectually lazy to say, you know, well, if they're coming legally and they're playing by the rules, we should let everybody. No, that's lazy.
Right. Yeah, it is. And it's like a blank check. I mean, where does that end, right? I mean, what's the number that ends? What's the number that's too much, right, if you go with that mentality? You know, I looked at a exit poll out of the New York City mayoral race, and since we're talking about Mamdani, he actually got the majority of his votes came from people that were not born in America. Now, they obviously, most of them that I saw, obviously they were legal voters because they voted in New York City, even though you could probably vote illegally there if you wanted to.
Right.
But the polling was basically saying that the support from Mamdani, yes, there's some native-born Americans that are voting for him that are sympathetic to socialism, et cetera. But there was also a large portion of foreign-born voters that immigrated to America, moved to America, became legal residents, and are now voting in our elections that voted for Mamdani. And so the whole point in this is to point out that America didn't get this way just because, you know, all of our native-born citizens just went astray and we lost our way. A lot of this decline in Western values, in biblical values, in constitutional values, a lot of this decline has happened because of the importation of foreigners and
That's
foreign
right.
ideals into our cities. And then those people become legal residents, then they register to vote. And then before you know it, you have people that just fundamentally disagree with America's ideals, but yet they're voting in our elections. And so to your point, Rick, we really just shouldn't allow people into this country that don't value and appreciate the principles that we were founded on. I want to get one more thought from you before we go to the break on this immigration topic, and that is the H-1B visa topic, because amongst the conservative movement, there's a lot of debate on this. You know, should we keep bringing in these foreigners to fulfill these jobs? What do you say?
I think that one can be a nuanced answer. You know, I think there are specialized jobs that if you can't find them in the U.S., find applicants to fill them, then we should look elsewhere, and that's where there it can be good immigration into the system. This one for me goes way back, Walker, all the way back to college, where I got in a big fight with the president of my university where I went to college, because they were given tons of the scholarships for that college to Middle Eastern students. And then those students were coming, using our money, getting that education. Most of them were going back to their countries. But I just thought, you know, why are we, that's not America first, that's America last. And so I've always felt like, you know, there's a balance here. There's got to be, You know, it's got to be in America's best interest. And I think a lot of people are they go too soft on this issue because they think we're not being nice or we're not being loving or we're not sharing what we have. And they forget we've already allowed – we have five times – one out of every five immigrants in the world is in America. We have more immigrants in America than the second, third, fourth, and fifth nations combined. We have been very gracious and very kind. And if people want to come
here,
say again,
1 million a year. One million a year.
Yeah, yeah. So I think you said it right a while ago. You know, there's got to be a limit. There's got to be a number. We've got to start using some common sense. And that's going to require, you know, more Trump-like people in office. And I think DeSantis is articulating this better than anybody, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't help that our economy is struggling. Affordability is a problem.
Oh, that's a whole other. Yeah, the housing thing is also because of all this immigration.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll talk a little bit more about that after the break, folks. Thanks for joining us. Walker Wildman, Rick Green here, co-hosting together on At the Core, American Family Radio. Check out the website, AFR.net. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. And we'll be back in just a few minutes, and we'll take your calls.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. Hey, 2026 is your year to go with us on one of our Christian Heritage Tours. We've got some dynamite tours lined up for 2026. We're going to Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. We're also going to Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, and we'll see George Washington's Mount Vernon estate while we're there, too. And then we're going to Boston. And to Concord and to Lexington, all the history in Boston. We'll also be meeting with a couple of our founding fathers. The D.C. and Williamsburg tours are in June and September, and the Boston tour is in September. So if you want to go with us, you want to see the pricing, the itinerary, everything, go to wildmangroup.com, W-I-L-D-M-O-N, group.com, wildmangroup.com, and we hope to see you on one of our 2026 tours.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Rick Green.
All right. Welcome back to the second segment of the program. And Rick and I are with you today here on the program. Walker Wildman, Rick Green, both hosting today on At the Core. Let me give out the number. We're going to take your calls here in just a little bit. 888-589-8888. 40 if you want to call in and comment on.
Hey, that was good, Walker. You did that number much better than I did.
Yeah, I actually like have it in front of me, Rick, you know, because, you know, sometimes our brain works and sometimes it doesn't.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah, but hey, I've had my fair share of times on the radio, Rick, where your mind just goes blank. Uh-huh. I tell you one of the worst ones, and then we'll quit chasing rabbits, but you're to blame for this. One of the worst times is when you blank on the name of your guest that you're interviewing. You know, maybe it's somebody, this is your first time interviewing them, so you're not familiar with them, and then you go blank on the person you're interviewing. That's a really bad feeling.
That's true, man. Been there, done that, brother. No doubt about it.
Hey, 888-589-8840. Rick and I will take your calls here in just a little bit on the topics we're discussing today. Speaking of the topics, let's shift gears and talk about something else, Rick. We're going to kind of hit as much as we can today. But the Epstein files. These are the documents related to the Jeffrey Epstein investigation. Obviously, he has since died, whether he killed himself or whether he was murdered, you know, who knows what the truth is there. Ultimately, we know what the authorities say. They say he committed suicide. But nonetheless, there's been this back and forth on different political parties wanting to release the Epstein files. President Biden had 4 years to release them, and he didn't. President Trump has refused to release them. And Rick, at the end of the day, number one, I'm curious what's actually going to be revealed that is worth this years-long battle. Because you would think, Rick, if it was something like a bombshell that it would have already been leaked at this point. So I just can't really figure out who to trust here. And I do have a theory, and let me go ahead and share my theory and I'll get your thoughts.
Okay.
One of the theories that I've talked to some of our, some of the guys I know that used to work in law enforcement, as far as how these investigations go, one of the theories that's kind of percolating out there is that there isn't really a grand conspiracy of dozens of men that used Jeffrey Epstein to victimize women. That instead, Jeffrey Epstein was the primary aggressor. He was the primary criminal in this enterprise that it was. And that mainly Maxwell was serving Jeffrey Epstein and basically trafficking underage girls to Jeffrey Epstein. But there isn't, you know, this list of dozens of businessmen that were engaged in illegal activity. And so thus, releasing the Epstein files is not really going to do anything other than expose the victims, if that theory holds water. And the FBI director has pretty much said such. So what do you say?
Yeah, I'm honestly conflicted, man, because on one hand, this became kind of the poster child for corruption in D.C. and the deep state, and everybody definitely wanted everything released, and I'm definitely a big believer in sunlight's the best disinfectant. I also believe in protecting victims, so that there is a balance there for sure. I think if I'm reading Trump's language correctly, I think what he's basically saying is, there's not enough here worth the distraction. There's not enough juice for the squeeze here. There's nothing really new. We've already released thousands and thousands of pages, and this totally distracts from the real fight and the important things that we're doing. And then, of course, there's the concern, and he hinted to this earlier this year, that, look, the Democrats controlled these agencies for 4 years, and they proved that they were willing to weaponize these agencies. They proved they were willing to lie. They proved they were willing to manipulate. And so who knows what they did with these files while they had them. So now that they've been handed over, and again, you know, we talked about this back in the summer, but Kash Patel and Dan Bongino and these guys have been, you know, basically airdropped behind enemy lines to run these agencies and try to figure out still tons of staff working against them, try to figure out where all the smoking guns are, try to figure out, you know, and think of all the issues that they're dealing with, from J6 to, you know, just all of it. So I guess I've been a little more patient than I thought I would be on this issue, giving them time to get their hands around all of these different things. I do think Bondi totally fumbled it. In making, you remember how they made such a big deal about what they were going to release, and it was
the binders.
It was a huge nothing burger. They totally bombed how they handled it. But now at this point, I'm like, man, it just seems like it's going to be another nothing burger and a total distraction. And I am a little bit. It's just a little. It's just kind of in the back of my mind, just, you know, tickling my just a little bit that who knows what was manipulated in this data and in these files at this point. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I trust whatever's going to come out anyways. That makes sense?
I
don't mean that in
you.
A conspiracy kind of, you know, I never trust anybody. I mean that just in a, it just feels so tainted at this point. I don't know what to believe.
Yeah, I agree. And ultimately, I really trust Dan Bongino and Kash Patel, to be honest with you.
Yeah, exactly.
And this whole, you know, and they've been criticized, I believe, unfairly. I mean, Kash Patel and Dan Bongino are the most MAGA that MAGA gets.
Yeah.
And to now suggest that they're compromised, which some have on the right, I think is just completely unfair. And part of this, Rick, to your point about, you know, might be a nothing burger, I'm really getting tired of the constant conspiracy chasing.
Yeah.
And I understand there are conspiracies that are true. You know, the government does do stuff that is wrong. And shady, to put it lightly. So many times they do stuff that's just blatantly illegal.
Sure, and evil sometimes. Yeah,
And we can go through those cases, and we can document facts about how that plays out. And there's no real conspiracy; it just is what it is. We can talk about January 6th, COVID, etc., the mass surveillance of Americans, all of these things, even people lying under oath, John Brennan, to be specific. But I'm also skeptical. So I understand that government obviously does shady things. The CIA does shady things. But I'm also hesitant to constantly be chasing the next conspiracy because it, to your point, it distracts us on actually doing things that are the here and now and solving real world problems that are at our fingertips. And so I think the Epstein files is probably going to be just another one of those things that just consumed years and years of the right's attention, ultimately to find out that there's nothing that we didn't expect, right? What we probably can expect is that there's some flight logs, which half of that's already been leaked, or there's some names of high-level businessmen or congressmen, both Democrats and Republicans, that were cozied up to Jeffrey Epstein. But it's going to fall short, I believe, of incriminating evidence, because if it was incriminating evidence, somebody would have already brought this up by now.
I agree.
And pressed charges. Yeah. So I just think much of this is a waste of time.
Yeah.
And Rick, let's while we're talking conspiracies.
And a lot of it, one more thing real quick before you move to the next one, is just the what people have forgotten is that this guy had enough money to throw around that he was able to lure in all kinds of people to associate with him. So whether it was, you know, some of the parties we've seen videos of, you know, with Trump standing there next to him, or, you know, offering his jet for people to fly to certain other, not just to the island. I'm talking about, I mean, people that needed to get from point A to point B, and that was an easy way to get there. So you're going to have a lot of good people, I think, that get tainted because of this. And that seems unrealistic to some people, but I'm telling you, there's just in that world of politics and business and all of that, you end up in a picture line with people that you don't know they're evil, or you end up somewhere with you don't know the things that they're doing, and all of a sudden there's a picture of you with them, or you're on you happen to be at the dinner table, or at their table at some big fundraiser. And anyway, I just throw that out there so that whatever comes out here, I'm betting there's going to be some people that did not do anything wrong, but are going to be it's going to be guilt by association.
Yeah, I agree. And since we're talking conspiracies, I haven't talked much about this on the program, but Rick, it seems like Charlie Kirk's assassination has just unleashed an unhealthy level of disunity on the right.
Oh man,
the conspiracies around Charlie Kirk's assassination is just wrong. It's so degrading, and I mean, whether we're talking Candace Owens or others.
It's so bad. Bad, Walker, that I don't know if you know, I filled in for Rob McCoy this weekend at his church in California, because he was in Israel with a huge group. They took about 250 people over. And so I was speaking at all four of their services this weekend. And, of course, that, you know, brings it close to home. I mean, we filmed our biblical citizenship class there 5 years ago. That's where we did so much of our preparation and training for the stuff that we did for the last 5 years, including the Turning Point Faith launch. And I was very thankful. Rob actually said it in the video intro he had for me this weekend. He said, when Charlie and I talked about launching Turning Point Faith, Rick Green was the first guy we called because we wanted, to get him involved with biblical citizenship. Anyway, all that to say, the fact that we have people like Candace Owens literally accusing Rob McCoy and Mikey McCoy of being involved in the assassination, and now disparaging all Calvary chapels across the country. And she's just lost her mind, man. I mean, it's lunatic stuff. And I think, Walker, what bothers me the most is not that somebody goes crazy, because, human nature, she likes the clicks, she likes being number one podcast, and she knows this is what's getting her at the top right now. What bothers me is that so many people are buying into it, and that they're gobbling it up. And it's just this human nature thing of, we love a good conspiracy, man. I don't know what it is about our nature that, but the Bible says that not call everything conspiracy that others call conspiracy, and to not, we're supposed to tear down those arguments that are, I agree with you. I think it's very bad for our side. It's very divisive. And, it's one thing to have debate. It's fine to disagree. It's fine to, even get down into the details. But man, what she's doing, I think it's just disgusting, honestly. I don't know a nice way to say it.
Yeah, I agree with you, and we'll take calls here after the next break, and you can call in at 888-589-8840. Rick and I'll take your calls here in just a few minutes. 888-589-8840. Rick, I think it's the blame. Obviously, the blame primarily is laid at the hands, the shoulders of people like Candace Owens, and people like her that are feeding these unfounded theories and implicating innocent people. It's very, very wicked. But ultimately, to your point, the fact that she still has a following that she does is astonishing to me. But when you look at the root driver here, Rick, I think it's primarily twofold. People are, much of our populace is biblically illiterate. And so they don't have genuine hope. They don't have kind of a sound footing to view the world from, and to be able to spot faulty arguments and people who aren't being genuine and pure in their motives. But we've almost taken, Rick, to your point about, like, you know, everybody loves a good conspiracy. It's like we've taken like Lifetime movies, which used to be the place where everybody went to watch some conspiracy movie, right? Or, you know, go to the movie theater and watch the latest, you know, Hollywood movie about what the CIA is doing. But we've like taken that and we've extrapolated it from like entertainment, and now we've like placed it in real life.
Yeah.
And people are making money now, but it's not actors anymore. It's like real life people that are being implicated. And the amount of evidence needed to create a conspiracy is like very minimal, if anything. I mean, a lot of this stuff that's being floated, Rick, is not even based in any fact at all. It's literally baseless, but it just percolates and people feed it.
Man, I got to tell you, this fits 2 Thessalonians so well. You know, David Barton teaches on this in Biblical Citizenship. Even 5 years ago, I was mentioning that to the folks at Godspeak this weekend, that he talked about, you know, the lack of, when you stop loving truth and wanting truth, you fall for the lie, and God literally sends the delusion. And I think that verse in 2 Thessalonians is where we are. Where I think there's a delusion, and I didn't realize that God sends the delusion until John Rich actually stopped me, and he's like, you know, no, Rick, you're reading that all wrong. Satan doesn't send the delusion. God sends the delusion. For this reason, God will send them a powerful delusion, and they'll believe the lie. And I think that's what's happening, man. I think what she's spewing is a delusion, and I think she's deluded, and I think people are falling for it, and it's because we don't love truth like we used to. I know we got a break, but I think this also gets into the whole we have to better understand what free speech is, and what you know, this fear of canceling, because we're so sensitive to that because of what the left did and the Orwellian thing, that we're not willing to shun people and say, I'm not going to platform them. I'm not going. That's not a case for civil discourse. I'm not going to invite some Nazi punk that is like the kid in the back of the room that just wants attention. And so giving him the platform is the worst thing you can do. That, I think, is also a mistake. We've got to better understand free speech and civil discourse and the right time to debate. And it's kind of that Proverbs thing of answer a fool according to his folly and then don't answer a fool according to his folly. It's like having the discernment of which one of those to do. You know what I mean by that?
Yeah. And I also think, Rick, that some people don't really want to fix any problems.
That's right.
They just want to stir things up and watch it all burn.
Yep.
I think Candace and others kind of fall into that category. But we've got to be rational, folks. We have to be reasonable, and we have to be here to solve problems. We can't just be here to create conspiracies.
Use our brains, man.
Yes, 100%. 888-589-8840. Rick Green, Walker Wildman, we're here with you today. As soon as we get back from the break, we're going to take your calls. 888-589-8840. We'll see you in a few.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Rick Green.
Welcome back to the program. Walker Wildman here on American Family Radio with Rick Green. And as we promised, we're going to take your calls 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. Rick, you want to kick us off?
Let's do it, man. Let's head over to Razorback Country first. Go Hogs, go. Todd, you are up first today, man. Go for it.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a quote theory here I want to ask about your opinions on. We know that President Trump is very astute in his business dealings, and he's a master of distraction. Because of all the things that are maybe a little unpopular with his base right now that's going on, some of the selling of the F-35s to Saudi Arabia, some of the stuff that he's wanting to do and accomplish in Gaza, might this Epstein stuff coming out and him saying, oh, let's release it, I know I'm not implicated, let's release it, is that maybe just to distract from some of the things that are going on?
He is a master of, you know, the mirror and the light, and get the cat to go, you know, run over there and chase the beer across the floor while he's, you know, taking care of something else. No doubt about it. What do you think, Walker? I think it is a distraction and at the end of the day, but do you think it's like, do you think Trump was thinking, okay, now's a good time to do this?
No, I don't, you know, honestly, I don't think President Trump has a whole lot of skin in the game here. And is President Trump listed in the files? Maybe, but probably not more than we already know, right? We know that he probably went to a few dinners with Epstein, and he flew on probably one or two occasions with Epstein from Palm Beach to New York. So there's some of that, but all of that we already know. And so if there's some groundbreaking, you know, incriminating evidence about Trump in the Epstein files, that would have been released either leading up to the 2016 election or leading up to the 2020 election or the 2024 election, all any three of those. No, I don't think it's that strategic. I just think that President Trump was being told by Bondi and by others that, hey, you don't need to release this, and here's the reasons why you don't need to release this. And I'm not here to say that was right or wrong, but I just think President Trump was doing what he was advised to, which is, hey, we don't need these files out there. But ultimately, at the end of the day, President Trump saw the writing on the wall that the files will be released because of the bipartisan support for the transparency. And so at this point, he's just like, hey, whatever you guys want to do, I'm good with.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good description for sure. Let's head over to Indiana. Maria is up next. I love doing our Midwest Patriot Academy there in Indianapolis at your Capitol. And you have an amazing Lieutenant Governor, Micah Beckwith. He's actually one of our biblical citizenship coaches and a pastor, and you're blessed to have him as your Lieutenant Governor. Maria, go ahead.
I'm so happy to be talking with both of you. and I would like to for us to assess what happened in the mayoral win in New York City with sobriety, and to put aside whatever other things we're thinking, because I think I used to live in New York, and I know how New Yorkers think. They just think very practically about their quality of life. And I think that vote was more of like a kind of like a Hail Mary vote. And the reason why I'm bringing it up is that people are now coming to vote. Like in my county, it took me an hour and a half to finish voting in the last election, and that has never happened to me. And I think people are now coming and really thinking about their vote. So the thing about the Mandamni win, I think we should take care and think about that, because if the economy does not improve, if houses cannot be bought, if we cannot buy used cars, we cannot buy eggs, bread, and blah, 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 then we are bombing countries and helping on blah, all the other stuff. It's all about the money now for ordinary Americans.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I think very, very good points, and I think that is a major Well, it's just historical that when people get desperate and at the end of the day, if they can't put food on the table or they can't get housing or whatever, they start getting desperate and they start looking for answers. And if they're civically ignorant to not know the evils of socialism and know that that's going to make it worse and bring everybody down to the lowest common denominator, and they haven't been taught economics, or they've been imported and brought in from around the world, and they actually think that they want socialism and they want the ability to destroy the culture and remake it, which is definitely, I mean, Islam's plan is to infiltrate and to conquer. It is not just to come here and live peacefully. That's you know, anybody that's buying that right now is certainly not reading the Quran or understanding what they really want. So, but I think Maria has a great point, Walker. That is, you know, we've got to do a better job of you know, the principles of liberty work, as Bob McEwen says, every time they're tried. But they only work if they're tried, if we actually put them in place and we've allowed these things to happen in our economy to the point that, you know, these kids are, especially the young people, they're looking for other answers.
Yeah. Yeah. I fall in the middle on this, Rick, because I don't want to go, you know, full, it's young people's problem. They're lazy. They don't want to work. So this is all on the shoulders of young people, because that's not wholly true. I also don't want to go full Mamdani and say that, you know, rich people are evil and we need to tax the rich and, you know, go all Bernie Sanders on us here. So I'm going to land somewhere in the middle on this. I think that America's economic system has been manipulated and rigged, if you will, in a way that if you're a higher income earner and you kind of figure out how to work the system, you're going to do fine. But if you're a middle to lower income earner, it's just really hard for you to make ends meet. And not all of this is, you know, the fault of capitalism. Some of this has to do with tax code and regulation and affordability. But at the end of the day, through free market means, not through government overreach, but through free market means, the Republicans and President Trump have to fix America's economic problems, whether it's housing affordability, whether it's wage growth or inflation. We have to make it easier and more affordable for families to make it in our country. And I think ultimately that's what people are upset about. But to your point, when they get desperate and they're not properly educated on the dangers of socialism, they end up falling that direction. So there's going to have to be a major intervention here on behalf of conservatism to young people and offer them solutions.
Yeah, and that's why it has to be a multi-pronged approach. I mean, we have to do better, you know, at just our overall policies, immigration, as we talked about earlier, and who's coming into the country. We've got to educate our own people better and take back the education system and start teaching the principles of liberty. And then just from a economic point of view, I remember President Trump during the campaign saying, I think if people have a choice between lower taxes or getting rid of all the regulations and the albatross around the neck of the American people, they would choose to get rid of the regulations so they at least have the freedom to go risk and try and work. And I think that's true. And I think that's part of the movement for the next 10 years that I think is going to be so important is redrawing those lines, those jurisdictional lines where we get government out of the micromanaging of everything, what Milton Friedman called years ago friction in the market, because you said it right. It is so manipulated. I think that was the word you used, manipulated and distorted our system, that it's made it very, very hard for people to succeed and very, very hard to provide jobs or to move up. And it's not because, you know, the world is unfair and the free market doesn't work and all those things. It's because, frankly, government got in the kitchen where it didn't belong and messed up the meal. And we have to start teaching that and getting people to once again understand, you know, why biblical economics actually work.
Yeah, and to your point, Exhibit A of your point here is Obamacare. They pitched this as a fix to unaffordable health insurance, not health care, but unaffordable health insurance, which those are two distinctly different things. And ultimately, Rick, here we are almost a decade later, and it's falling apart. Over a decade later, Obamacare is falling apart, but well, what are they going to do? They're going to propose more government, even though Obamacare is government and it caused the problem. And so we have to be careful.
Did you see the numbers that are getting revealed by Brooke Rollins over at Department of Agriculture? Like almost 200,000 dead people getting those benefits, 500,000 getting double payments. I mean, this just tells you why the founders were so wise to say that the federal government should not be involved in any of this. There should be no Department of Agriculture. There should be no food stamps and welfare at the federal level. If you want to do that stuff at the local and state level, let's have that debate and talk about who does a better job, the church or government, in taking care of the poor. But when you do it at the federal level, it's so far away and it's so big, it's going to have corruption and fraud. And so I'm hoping that even the government shutdown itself was you know, an opportunity that people found out just how corrupt SNAP is, just how bad the healthcare system is, and what is it? It's approaching 50% of the federal budget now, healthcare is. It's unconstitutional. They shouldn't be doing anything with this. So I do think it's going to take some major challenging of the status quo and getting us to think differently and being willing to alter or abolish our government, as Jefferson said in the Declaration. Let's abolish a bunch of these departments and let's alter this thing back to a system where people do thrive, where there is a growing you know, free market economy, and you can still have a safety net, but the safety net's in the community, and the church is at the center of that, not government.
Well, and to your point, the government was shut down for over 40 days and there was no major national security crisis. You know, I mean, we've got to have FAA, we've got to have air traffic controllers, you know, even though that could actually probably be run private or at the state level. But there's a handful of core government functions that are outlined in the Constitution.
That's right.
But to your point, we don't need these multi-billion dollar agencies with tens of thousands of employees that when the government shut down and they're at home not working, nobody misses a beat. I think that was very eye-opening.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was a lesson, right? It was like, okay, this, we went that long with all the supposedly not, if it's non-essential, like if it was non-essential and we could shut it down for that long, maybe it shouldn't be happening at the federal level in the first place. Let's try to squeeze one more in. David was, let's see, from Tennessee. David from Tennessee, you get to be our last caller today. What's your comment or question today?
Hey guys, I just wanted to know what you guys, like a good strategy or a reason why. I heard in the last election for the New Jersey and Virginia, I think I told your receptionist lady, one of the Carolinas, but Virginia, that 600,000 Republicans didn't come out and vote. And even in the 2020 election, you know, for Arizona and Nevada, a lot of those Republicans didn't come out and vote. I was just wondering, what do you guys think would it take for people to care enough, to think it's important enough to come out and vote? Because if these people would have voted, then we should have been good.
Yeah. Walker, it's still roughly the same numbers. Roughly half of Christians aren't registered and half of the registered don't vote. I mean, if we're going into battle with a quarter of our team on the field, that's like going into a football game and you say, well, we don't want all 11 of our players on the field. We're just going to take three of our guys out there, or even four, and our four against their 11. And, you know, I mean, He's right. I mean, it does come down to our responsibility and stewardship of this gift we have called a vote.
Yeah. Yeah. In New Jersey and Virginia, we could blame a lot of people and a lot of entities, but ultimately, President Trump and J.D. Vance did effectively zero visits to Virginia and New Jersey.
I think turn out the vote.
Correct. I think President Trump did one teleconference with the New Jersey gubernatorial candidate. And the RNC did very little there. And it was actually very shocking how little the Trump administration and the Republicans did in New Jersey and Virginia. I mean, think about how close it is for President Trump to appear with Winsome Sears in Virginia. That's like in their backyard. You could probably drive the motorcade or Marine One over there to do a rally. But nothing. So I don't know what was going on there. I don't know whether the administration, the Trump campaign was distracted, you know, with the executive duties and all the foreign travel. I don't know what was going on, but I think there could have been a whole lot more done there on the ground in turnout on behalf of the conservative movement and Republican voters that could have upped that vote count, because New Jersey is a pretty solid blue state. I'm not even going to say it's purple necessarily, but they've only been a couple hundred thousand votes away from voting for President Trump, which 100,000, 200,000, that's within reach, within striking distance with proper voter turnout measures. So New Jersey was kind of in that camp where they could go red at some point, whether it's presidential or governor.
Yeah, I obviously both states, you know, like you said, blue. The Youngkin thing was there were some unique things that happened there. Lots of blame to go around. I mean, the Republican Party there, terrible job with, you know, the lieutenant governor pick and just a lot of the different things that happened there. But I would say to our people across the country, I don't see those two states or those two results as an indicator of where we are as a nation. I think it's much more competitive out there. And the midterms are going to be just massive. And so this is a time to get involved, get educated, get good candidates out there. Help encourage people in your church to run. Get them on the ballot for those local offices. And let's have a good 2026 election. We can all do something to help make that happen. Walker Wildman and Rick Green, both of us with you today. So thanks for joining us today. Walker will be back with you tomorrow. I'll be with you Thursday, and then he'll close out the week with you on Friday. Have a fantastic week, and thanks for listening to At the Core.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family